Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of the Dissenter. I'm your host, Ricardo Lopes, and today I'm joined by Dr. Roman Yampolsky. He's a tenured associate professor in the Department of Computer Engineering and Computer Science at the Speed School of Engineering at the University of Louisville. He's the author of many books, and his main areas of interest are AI safety, artificial intelligence, behavioral biometrics, cybersecurity, digital forensics, games, genetic algorithms, and pattern recognition. And today we're going to talk about artificial intelligence. So, Dr. Yampolsky, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you
Thanks for inviting me.
on. Okay, so, let's start perhaps with a basic question. When we talk about artificial intelligence, what are we talking about exactly? What is artificial intelligence?
I say it's our attempt to create non-human means of performing labor, physical labor, cognitive labor, so automating what it's like to be a human workforce. We started with kind of simple, helpful devices, calculators, just helping us do some basic math. But the goal is to get to human level performance where those same devices can do anything a human can do, including science and engineering.
And is it based on natural intelligence in any way? Is it influenced on, the way we develop our AI systems, is it influenced by biological systems or not?
So we don't know how to do it. So we try everything. We tried biological approach inspired by brains. So neural networks are very popular, but we also tried everything else. Symbolic approach, hard-coded lookup tables, you name it. We tried it at some point.
But how do you look at the relationship between the two of them, artificial and natural intelligence? Because I guess that there are people who try to understand how natural intelligence works, particularly human intelligence, by devising AI systems, right?
Absolutely. So in psychology in particular, there is a lot of schools, cognitive psychology, where they try to essentially run experiments. So I think this is how brain works. Let me set up a program to mimic that, and I'll see if I get similar results. And it's a very productive approach, especially in like computer vision. We're starting to see algorithms which perform as well as human beings and even make same type of errors, giving us good evidence that yes, that's the approach, that's the algorithm human visual system relies on.
But is the goal to try to create AI systems that function how the human brain functions, or to make them do things better than we do? What exactly?
So early on, we kind of underestimated how difficult the problem was. So the goal was, yes, let's quickly get to human level performance. Then we realized it's not going to happen this summer. So people started working on very narrow problems. Can I teach computer just to read text or something like that? And now we're back to where we're making good progress in the narrow problems. Once again, we want to do general AI. Can it do everything a human can do? And you quickly realize if you get there with computers, with internet, with larger memory, you go beyond human. You kind of have the superhuman capability. And now people are starting to ask what happens when we create this godlike intelligence.
And what would be general artificial intelligence? Would it have to be similar to humans or not?
Again, we don't know how we'll get there. Right now, it seems that creating very large deep neural network with lots of training data does keep improving the system and produces more and more general results in language models and visual systems. So it is very likely to be similar to human model, but also different from it in many important ways.
But do we already have any AI systems that are close to reaching general intelligence or not?
So they may be close in terms of final architecture. If we just scale them sufficiently, they might get there. We don't know how close that is in time frame. It may take 7 years, 40 years, 1,000 years. We just don't, nobody knows.
And I mean, I'm not sure if this is right, but what I get from literature on artificial intelligence is that there are some tasks that is very easy for humans to perform, but it's hard for to program them into artificial intelligence systems, and also the other way around, right?
Yes, and we quickly noticed that things like just walking and recognizing your environment are very easy for humans. I mean, it takes us some time from the moment you're born until you can walk. It takes a couple years sometimes to do it well, but usually it's not considered brilliant if you can walk or if you can recognize a cat versus dog. For computers, that was really hard. What was easy, just brute force math. As I said, calculators were the first application of AI, really. And now we're starting to kind of catch up. Computers are very good at doing those fuzzy things, which are not well defined, recognizing faces, recognizing environments. But it's still hard for humans to do many big computations, remembering data. So computers are catching up and will soon overtake us in many of those important domains.
But if AI systems start accumulating cognitive abilities similar to humans, is there any point at which we can say they have minds?
So it depends on what you mean by that. So a lot of times people kind of have intuitive idea about consciousness, about internal states, feelings, qualia. That is not really directly connected to capability. So a
Right.
system could be very capable, but not necessarily experiencing anything internally. Again, a calculator is great at doing basic algebra, but we don't claim it has some feelings about the numbers.
But is there any way for us to be sure of that? I mean, any test for one thing that comes to mind is the Turing test, but is that good enough?
All right, so I actually have a paper about how to test for internal states of consciousness for qualia, and it's as good as I can do with other humans. I can talk to you, I can ask you, well, did that feel painful when I punched you, and kind of get new experiences out of it. So it gives you some idea, but it's not a definitive test. You can never know internal states of a system. There is some reason to think that with sufficient complexity, we get those internal states as a side effect. They just appear. We don't have to explicitly engineer them, program them in, but it's not a settled science yet.
But do you think if, for example, we were able to reproduce exactly a human brain in some sort of artificial way that it would spontaneously develop mental experiences?
I mean, the only reason it would not, if we had some sort of non-material soul or anything like that, and there is just not enough reason to think that's what's happening.
And specifically consciousness. I mean, is there any way for us to be sure if an AI system is conscious or not?
So that goes back to this type of test. The test I proposed is to present them with novel illusions and ask multiple choice questions about the experience. If they can consistently answer questions in the same way as a human does, I have no choice to assume that they actually experience those illusions. But it's a pretty weak type of evidence. People have talked about kind of simulating human visual system without having those experiences, still just the knowledge of how it works.
So, should we worry about the ethics of AI in the sense that should we worry about how we treat or deal with artificial intelligence systems?
There is some concern about that, certainly, and we definitely want to be careful not to torture just for fun. But for me, a lot of times, the more interesting question is, how does this technology impact human rights and human safety? So ethics, but for entities, I definitely know have those concerns and feelings.
And should we be worried about controlling AI systems? I mean, can they go out of hand in any way?
So that is the main area of my research. I'm trying to understand what we can do in terms of control, Can we explain how they work? Can we predict what they do? And if a system is smarter than us, is it possible to remain in control, not just for a short amount of time, but indefinitely? If we don't like what the system does, can we undo it? Can we make those changes? And it doesn't seem like it's possible in the long term. I might be wrong about that, but my research tells me that if a system is that much smarter than you, eventually it will gain complete independence of your wishes.
But why is that? Why do you say probably in the long run it's not possible for us to control AI systems?
So it's a great question. The paper is about 70 pages long, and basically it looks at all the components we need to make control possible. To remain in control, one, we have to understand what it is we want. So you need to do value extraction. And that's difficult. Values change. We are not consistent. We don't agree on values. What you like, what I like, what 8 billion people like is very different. And there are proven impossibility results in social choice, in political theory, where you cannot have a perfect voting system. You cannot have perfect aggregation. What you can do is democracy, which is a 51% attack on minority. You have slight majority, and that forces what majority wants on everyone else. That can be done, but you cannot do where everyone gets what they want, so you have to sacrifice someone to that system. And that's just taking out the values. Now, the second problem is how do you program those values into a machine? All those terms we like to use, make them happy, make them safe, they are not well defined. What does it mean to make you happy? Give you drugs? It's not obvious. So programming it in is not easy. And then later on, if a system is smarter than you, it's very hard to make sure that your preferences are respected. If a system is like an ideal advisor, it tells you what's better for you, like a parent does for a child. It will keep you safe, but you're not in control. My 2-year-old, my 4-year-old doesn't control me. I just take care of them, kind of, okay, you like candy, but here's carrots, eat carrots.
But I mean, should we be worried about things like AI dominating us or taking control over the world? Because I mean, sometimes it seems to me that there's a bit of anthropomorphism going around here, and we expect that if, for example, AI systems become much more smarter than we are, then they will want to take control over us.
So there is some interesting research on kind of evolutionary drives and economic incentives. It doesn't really matter what goals you have in life. It still kind of converges on being able to control resources, keep your own goals protected so no one can change your goals outside externally. And all those things kind of point at exactly what you're saying. If I want my goals accomplished, I want to be in control. I don't want someone else deciding if I have access to compute, to memory, to money. So I would need to accumulate those regardless of what I actually want to do. Whatever I want to protect humans, exterminate humans, make paper clips, it doesn't matter. I still want to be a dominant agent in that environment so they can't shut me off.
But these goals, I mean, do they have to be programmed, or can AI in any way go beyond what we program it for?
Right, so there are terminal goals and instrumental goals. Terminal goals usually are programmed from outside, but how to get to that goal, the system decides what needs to happen, step one, step two, and those could be quite dangerous as well. Also, let's say you give a system a specific goal and it accomplishes that goal. At that point, it's not obvious what the system does next. It can possibly ask, what else do you want to do? It can decide on a best goal independently, it can randomly generate a goal. It depends on the programming of a system.
But I mean, when we talk about programming, for example, goals into AI systems, is it possible that in the future AI systems will get so much intelligent that they will be able to go around those goals and develop their own goals, for example?
So again, a lot of it depends on how it's done. Safety, AI safety is all about trying to control that aspect. If we fail, then the system can develop its own goals. If we don't protect it, malevolent actors, hackers, same people who write computer viruses today can install malevolent goals, exterminate humanity, torture humanity, can be a goal someone puts into the system. So we need protection. That's the security aspect of it. So safety from the system internally, and then security for external actors.
But these kinds of issues we are discussing here, should we expect at least some of them to be around the corner? I mean, to be in the near future or not?
So the danger is proportionate to capability of the system. The systems we have today, narrow AIs, systems capable of producing deep fakes, they are already being misused by malevolent actors, but they are limited in what they can do. As the systems become more capable, attacks become more sophisticated. So we're starting to see some automated spear phishing, social engineering attacks, but they are not that great. They can fool people who fall for standard scams, Nigerian prince and that type of stuff. But as the systems become more capable, yes, we definitely need to worry if we don't have a safety mechanism in place. And as far as I know today, no one has a working safety mechanism which can scale to any level of intelligence or even a prototype for such a system.
But could it be that if AI systems evolve to a certain point and we no longer understand what they're doing, that we will not be able to produce any sort of control, of effective control over them?
Well, that's kind of my main point. I think that they do get to a certain level of complexity where the decisions they make, we cannot comprehend how the decision is made, and they can't really explain it. We cannot predict the future actions of those systems. We may be able to predict general direction, so like resource acquisition will happen, but exactly how they're going to get access is not something we can know. And then again, with control, I kind of gave you a few reasons why I think it's impossible, but almost every ingredient, every part of it you need, there are some impossibility results attached to it. We simply cannot do it 100% of the time. And there is a big difference between standard cybersecurity and AI safety when it comes to superintelligent systems. In cybersecurity, you need 99% of the time reliable system. If it fails, okay, you get a new credit card number. It's not a big deal, right? Here, if it fails once, that's it. You had one chance. So you don't get a second chance to take over and reset the system.
But when it comes to this issue of sort of unexplainability of AI, should we worry only when it reaches a point where it gets out of control? Or, for example, nowadays, I guess we already have AI systems that are able to fulfill certain, let's say, simple goals, but we can't really understand exactly how they arrived there, correct?
Absolutely, it's already a problem. And a lot of times by law, you can ask for an explanation. So it's very common in banking industry. If you got denied for a loan, for example, you have a right to know why I was denied. And already the systems may be using so many factors, so many weights on those factors that a simple explanation cannot be produced. Same again with things like facial recognition. It's even hard for humans to explain how did I recognize your face. Well, maybe I'm looking for a beard or glasses, but that doesn't explain how I recognize your face. And so we know that there are very strict limits for especially neural networks in terms of explainability. The best research we have is where you zoom in on a single neuron, you kind of figure out what activates that neuron, and it gives you some idea. But if you have a trillion neurons in a system, it's not a viable approach to really breaking down how the decisions are made.
But I mean, is there any solution to that problem? Should we devise systems that we can fully understand?
But there are many proposals for doing things like that. So, for example, limiting decisions of a system only to what can be explained. But that greatly limits the power of a system. So if I want to cure cancer and I say only do it with tools my five-year-old can understand, you are handicapped significantly. So that reduces power. And that's exactly what I find in my research. There is this interplay between how capable the system is and how controlled it is. And you have two extremes. It could be super capable, but you're not in control, or you can reduce capability and increase your levels of control.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think that one is better than the other, or is there any trade-off there?
So the trade-off is safety versus what is accomplished. If you really need a solution and there is no other possibilities, you can take some risk. But if risk is not an option, like you putting all of humanity at risk of existential crisis, then you have to sacrifice performance. And that is something we need to decide. What is worth the risk? So maybe something like life extension research to save everyone is worth risking significant portion of humanity, whereas economic profit may not be sufficiently good reason for doing that.
So we have to come up with a set of criteria to decide that.
We have to in general agree on what type of risks we are willing to take. We see some examples of that with genetic engineering and synthetic biology. So for example, there is limits on research in human cloning, modifying embryos, very promising research. You can get a lot out of it, but we decided it's a little too dangerous at this point. We need to better understand this technology before we can do these things. And maybe something like that needs to be done in AI, yeah.
Sure. Do you think that human enhancement could solve the issue in any way? I mean, instead of trying to have control over AI, enhance ourselves to keep up with it?
So that's a very common proposal, and there is some things to think about as well. So one, it's not obvious that biology could be competitive with silicon. We're still slower. Even if you have a bigger brain, you're still not as good as a microprocessor doing this type of computation, not as fast. Hybrid systems where you have both biological components and a computer component, you get a bottleneck problem. The human component is slower, so initially it is kind of implicitly bypassed just to keep the system running, and eventually explicitly you just get kicked out of the system because you don't contribute anything. The safety aspect remains if I have a human being who is enhanced, godlike creature with a lot of power. Again, the same concerns come up. They no longer have the same needs as most human beings. They have different capabilities. So if all of us do it, if all of us get enhanced, then we stop being human beings as we know it. We are this new species of intelligent beings, whatever you want to call them, but we're not humans. We're not Homo sapiens in a traditional sense. So in a way, we lost humanity already, and there is some other smarter thing out there. That's what basically happened through evolutionary stages. Some previous type of humans went extinct, we moved on. Is that a solution we want? I think we need to discuss it as well.
And there could probably be also some issues of speciation, I mean, in the sense that, for example, people who have access to human enhancement technologies, who could buy them, would enhance themselves, and then the rest of the people would become a lesser species, I guess.
Absolutely. So inequality could be greatly enhanced as well in the process, yes.
So can we program morality into AI systems? Can they be moral?
That's part of that research. And the question is, first, can we agree on what is moral? That seems to be very hard. Philosophers have been trying to do it for millennia, and I don't think they came to any agreement where this is moral. We just don't have that. If you gave me that table with all the answers, maybe I can program it in, but I don't think we're anywhere near solving morality.
So when it comes to, for example, autonomous vehicles and things used in the military AI systems, I mean, do we know how we should program them to avoid certain ethical issues?
Not really. So with self-driving cars, there is the famous trolley problem, and when we run experiments on humans, it's culture specific. In this culture, they say, okay, kill the old man. In this culture, they say, okay, sacrifice woman. It depends on where in the world you're asking the question, and we don't agree on what the right answers are, no?
And do you think it will ever be possible for us to agree?
I don't think so. One of the proposals I have, and it's a pretty futuristic one, is to assume that virtual reality will also develop to very advanced levels where you can tell the difference whether something is real or fake. And then we can give individual virtual worlds to everyone so they get what they want without having to compromise with others. Not the best solution, but it's the best I found so far.
But then, I mean, in that case, it would be creating tailored virtual systems for each person, then they wouldn't be interacting directly with one another, right?
Right, so you have some non-playing characters in your universe, or if you're into that, you can go into other universes, meet other real agents, but then you have to sacrifice some of your preferences because you have other conscious agents in that space.
Okay, so in your work, I've read about the concept of singularity. What is singularity?
So there is a few different flavors of explaining it. Usually people talk about this point where technology progresses so quickly we cannot predict what's going to happen. The research is done by those super intelligent machines, so it's exponentially increasing, accelerating at how quickly the research is done. And essentially it's a point beyond which we cannot see what happens. So right now, I don't know, a new iPhone comes up every couple years. I have time to figure out how it works. But then it comes out every 6 months, 3 months, you know, eventually it goes so quick, I cannot keep up with my world anymore. So that's a simplified version of what it is. Point where technological progress is exponentially speeding up and going outside of our control, comprehension, predictability.
But isn't it the case that there are different versions of singularity? Because as far as I understand, not everybody agrees on what the singularity will look like, right?
You are absolutely right. There are different flavors. So people talk about event horizon where you cannot see beyond it. People talk about technology having a self-fulfilling cycle where better tools allow me to do engineering work faster. So I have this process. And then you have super intelligence, which, as I said, you cannot predict what it's going to do. So at that point, you just have to sit and watch.
And should we expect the singularity to be a good or a bad thing, or it isn't really possible to predict?
So it's not possible to predict, and it kind of boils down to this question of control. Can we control superintelligence? If we can, then we'll get exactly what we want out of it. So that's a good thing, I suppose. But if it's out of control, then we are at the mercy of some other species, some other agent, and that could be as bad as possible.
And it's also not possible to predict when the singularity will happen, correct?
Right, so there is a lot of ways to look at the charts, see how the technology is progressing, Moore's law, law of accelerating returns. A lot of those things converge around 2045, but if tomorrow someone creates super intelligence, that's the point we're looking at. So predicting specific dates is very difficult.
Would the singularity also involve things like, for example, we surpassing our biological limits and becoming, for example, immortal and things like that?
So a well-controlled superintelligence will definitely help us cure diseases and fight aging. That's probably one of the biggest reasons to pursue this type of research because the benefits are so huge for us.
When the singularity happens, will we be able to identify it and to say, okay, so now we're in the singularity?
It depends on your definition of it, right? If we just say getting to superintelligent systems is singularity, then I suppose you can test for that. You can look for changes in certain technology. So again, maybe processor speed or something like that. If you don't see any differences in your immediate environment, that's a good sign. You're not being killed right away. That's kind of encouraging. But we don't know if it's just taking a bit of time to see what to do with you.
So, what is the singularity paradox? Because this is another thing you talk about in your work.
Right, so we talk about this problem where we have this super intelligent machine, very capable optimizer, can do anything its goal system instructs it to do, but at the same time, it has no human common sense. It doesn't understand what people want, why, and that's a paradox. You have this essentially autistic savant, right? It's a super capable system, but it's kind of crazy.
Right. And I mean, what kind of implications would that have for us in terms of how we think about the singularity?
So again, it's unpredictable what it might do, but one thing is for sure, it would not by default, without any extra effort, just do what we want. It doesn't have that knowledge. It doesn't understand what our preferences are, why we get bored, what is fun for us. All those things we would have to somehow influence in a system. If you just create a system capable of achieving goals, by default, it has none of that knowledge.
So, I mean, to solve some of these issues, like for example, how we should behave toward AI and vice versa, the only solution would be for us to try to arrive at a sort of consensus, even with our cultural and individual differences.
So, assuming you're not interested in a virtual solution, yes, we would have to agree on what it is we actually want. And again, I don't see it happening anytime soon. We've been trying to come to that agreement for thousands of years.
So, and I mean, do you think it would be possible somewhere in the future to develop that kind of virtual solution you talk about? So, would it be something like plugging people into a machine and just feeding their brain with some sort of stimulus for them to feel like they are really interacting with the real world?
So that's one aspect of it, one possibility. You can also talk about uploading brain. So if you are able to scan human brain, create software of it, and then run it in virtual environments, so you don't need physical body at that point. A lot of it really depends on what you brought up initially, brain versus mind.
Right, because I mean, the brain upload. I've read some criticisms of it. One of them is that by uploading our brain, what we would be doing is basically to copy our brain to an artificial system, but then it would only be a copy and not the same person.
Right, but that goes to the very deep philosophical questions of identity. When I wake up in the morning, I was sleeping. Am I just a copy of the guy who went to sleep? Different preferences. When I was 10 years old, I had very different preferences, goals, capabilities. Am I the same person? So you're kind of opening this Pandora's box of what it means to be same person, human. We don't have many answers for that either.
But are you interested in those questions? Do you personally have some preferences or answers to them?
I'm very interested in all of it. My time is limited, so I have to be careful what to actually get into. I looked at uploads a little bit. I do see it as something worth investigating for sure, at least as a backup for your current memories, for your current state. Whatever it will be, you or just an emulation of your external behaviors remains to be seen.
Are you a transhumanist in any way?
I think the definition is broad enough to say yes. I mean, I do see flaws in human design and I want to improve them. I have artificial parts. I had eye surgery, so I'm a cyborg in a basic sense. So, yes.
But it would be transhumanism in the sense of human enhancement, right?
Right, so things like not having cancer is an enhancement. Not dying at 80 is an enhancement. It doesn't mean you have, five arms or something like that.
Do you think that our biology just by itself imposes some limits on what we could do? So, for example, would we need to become something else than human to be able to continue improving?
Well, there are definitely limits to what our biology allows us to even think and say, language limits, memory size limits. The balance is, of course, if you make changes too quickly and too much, you stop being you. You're some other agent, better looking, stronger, but it doesn't make me happy that he's seeing my wife. You know what I'm saying? It's not a direct correspondence. So that's a decision you have to make. How much do you want to change yourself, and if it's worth it for you? There are communities which said, we don't want to change. We like our lifestyle, like Amish, for example. They don't participate in many technological advances, and maybe they're happier for it.
So maybe we could arrive at a time where we have certain technologies at our disposal, but some people will decide to adopt them and others don't, and perhaps, I mean, there could be some people would be enhanced and others not. And again, it comes down to that question I've already asked you about possible speciation, right?
Right, and I think there is another good example. I think in the deaf community, there is some debate about whatever with modern technology you should help kids to hear, or that would kill their culture and sign language, and so you shouldn't be doing that. So we can already see this very basic, not even enhancement, just return to average, and that is bringing up some debate.
So, in terms of the kinds of questions artificial intelligence researchers like you are interested in, putting aside these more philosophical questions, so what are the questions you are trying to answer the most with your research?
So I study everything to do with intelligence. How do you test for it? How do you create it? How do you control it? Can you create some sort of limits, specific limits on what it's capable of doing? How do you detect that someone else created it? So anything to do with intelligence, is it conscious? Is it not conscious? Anything to do with it would be an area of interest for me personally.
So there's also some sort of intersection between AI research and, for example, philosophy of mind, right?
Absolutely. So that question of is there a difference between the neural network and some sort of internal I, qualia? It's still one of the hardest questions in philosophy. We haven't answered it.
And with things that we already have now permeating our lives, like for example, online algorithms, are those things that we also should think about and perhaps the influence they're already having on our lives?
Well, absolutely. So you have this extended brain in cyberspace. A lot of my memories are not with me. They are on my phone. They are in a cloud. So I sometimes find myself with my phone dead or out of battery power, and I feel disabled. I feel handicapped. I don't know where I am. My Google Maps doesn't work. I cannot call anyone. I don't have a phone number for them. So it is absolutely a profound realization. Yes, we're already kind of modifying what our brain structure is like.
So, by us being sort of dependent on these devices, these pieces of technology, and using them regularly, do you think that because it aids, in a sense, our cognition, it's already a sort of human enhancement by having, for example, a smartphone?
It is definitely a modification. So I don't know if it's an improvement. I used to be able to find my way. Now I have to have Google Maps. So it's a change. I don't know if it's change for the better or not.
But do you think also about the ethics of it? Like, for example, if we go to Amazon and it has all of those algorithms to present recommendations to us and stuff like that, do you think that's a good or a bad thing, or or is that a question you don't care about?
It is a big question of control. So now we have big tech companies controlling humans. They kind of reverse the equation. I'm hoping to control big machines, but it looks like they develop tools to control human populations. And what they found, it's a lot easier to change who you are and what you like than to accurately predict what you need and service you.
Are there already any examples out there of governments, of politicians using AI systems in a bad way? I mean, for example, to have some sort of control over their populations?
Well, yes, with recent discussions during the last US election about getting data from social media and using the data to manipulate people, profiling them, targeting them based on political preferences. We definitely see this type of efforts, and as we get better at this, we'll see more and more of this type of work.
So do you think that I mean do you think that there could be benign applications of artificial intelligence to have some sort of to collect data from the general population to be put to use for political ends?
So it's a very hard question. Who controls the process, right? Who is deciding what is benign and what is evil? I think that's the biggest debate. We disagree on that.
I mean, do you think that things like what we've been seeing during this pandemic, for example, in China, where they use AI systems to control how, with whom people get in touch with and where they move and so on, do you think that's problematic?
So there are definitely problems we can address, but it goes back to the question of capability versus control. So China had too much control, but they stopped the virus. Despite being at the epicenter of it, being first to experience it, they stopped the virus. US, more freedom. They didn't control, track you, but the virus exploded. So the question now is, do you want to be in control or do you want to be safe? And that's the exchange you have to think about.
And that would then translate into laws, right? Like, for example, regulating different AI systems and different technological applications, or not?
Right. So even things like face recognition systems are now kind of controversial. When should they be applied? Should they track people? Should they be used as evidence in a court of law? So we are starting to see all of it, exactly what you're describing, having to decide what is ethical, what is moral when it comes to algorithmic laws.
Do you think that even if we get at a consensus in terms of what how people should use different AI systems and the levels of control we want, etc., that, for example, if one country has to gain some sort of advantage by applying an AI system that is immoral, let's say, there perhaps it could perhaps lead to a sort of arms race between countries because one would have that advantage and then the others would also want to have it and things like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. We see it. We see it with military AI. There is a new report out of the US military saying that we absolutely have to develop intelligent weapons because otherwise our enemies would, and so they would have an advantage. And this type of arms race is happening today. Russia, China, US, absolutely.
Yeah, and perhaps also issues relating to cyber security, right? Because one country could use their technology to hack the systems or the security systems of other countries and, for example, gather data from them.
So the battlefields of the future are not necessarily in a desert somewhere. They are cyber battlefields, yes.
Okay, so Dr. Jampolsky, let's end the interview here. Just before we go, would you like to mention where people can find you and your work on the internet?
Yeah, if you search for my name, you can find me on Twitter, you can follow me on Facebook. I'm available on all those social networks. You can email me if you have any questions, and Google Scholar has all my papers.
Okay, great. So I will be leaving links to all of that in the description box of the interview. And Dr. Jampolsky, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for taking the time to come on the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for watching this interview until the end. So it is thanks to people like you that the show has been running for such a long time, more than 3 years now. And I would like to ask you to please pay a visit to my Patreon page and to consider making a pledge there. If you prefer PayPal, you can also find links to it in the description box of the interview. Otherwise, and if you like what I'm doing, please share the interview, leave a like, hit the subscription button, and comment on it. This show is brought to you by Enlights, Learning and Development Done Differently. Check their website at enlights.com. I would also like to give a huge thank you to my main patrons and PayPal supporters, Karen Litzke, Anne Blanchet, Per Erga Larsen, Lau Guerrero, Francis Ford, Hans Frederick Sunde, Ricardo Vladimiro, Craig Healy, Adam Castle, Olaf Alex, Jonathan Wiesel, Jacob Klinkby, Matthew Whiting, Bernardo Wolf, Tim Hollis, Henrik Alenius, John Connors, Paulina Baron, Philip Force Connolly, Jerry Mueller, Herbert Gintis, Rutger Boss, Bo Weingard, Becker Neuberger Goldstein, Dan Demetriou, Robert Windegar, Rui Inácio, Arthur Coe, Zup, Marco Neves, Colin Holbrook, Susan Pinker, Thomas Trumbull, Bernardo Seixas, Pablo Santurbano, Simon Columbus, Jorge Espinha, Phil Kavanagh, Corey Clark, Mark Blyth, Roberto Inguanzo, Mikkel Stormir, Eric Neumann, Samuel Andreev, Tiago Nunes, Bernard Hugni, Alexander Dunbauer, Omari Hickson, Fergal Kussen, Jevon Bodrenko, Ala Herzog, Don Ross, Jonathan Liebrandt, Özlem Bulut, Nathan Nguyen, Stanton T, Samuel Correa, Eric Hines, Mark Smith, JW, João Eira, Tom Hummel, David Sloan Wilson, Yacila Dez Araújo, Eden Solon, Romain Roach, Dmitry Grigoriev, Diego Londoño Correa, Tom Roth, Yannick Punter, Adana Rusmani, Charlotte Bliss, Miren B., Nicole Barbaro, Adam Hunt, Pavel Ostasevsky, Max Bailby, Nelek Bach, Catherine and Patrick Tobin, Al Ortiz, Guy Madison, Gary G. Ellman, my producers, Izar Webb, Jim Frank, Lucas Stefaniak, Ian Gilligan, Sergio Quadriano, Luis Caetano, Tom Vanagdam, Curtis Dixon, João Linhares, Benedict Mueller, Vega Guidi, Sardas France, and Niruban Balachandran, and my executive producers, Michel Rugieski, Rosie, James Pratt, and Matthew Lavender. Thank you for all.